It's Lars. Thank you for checking out my podcast, and have a great day.
It's Friday. Friday on my mind. Oh, Friday. Yeah, it's Friday. Woo!
Welcome to First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Thank God it's Friday.
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
We will make America great again.
Call 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS to speak your mind. Now, First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show and happy First Amendment Friday. We celebrate your First Amendment right to sound off to the entire country on this show at least once a week. And of course, as always, naysayers go to the head of the line. But on First Amendment Fridays, every subject is fair game. There is nothing we will not talk about as long as you keep it clean enough to help me avoid FCC fines. We've got a lot to talk about, too. Despite divisions between moderates and conservatives, the House GOP is moving forward with the proposed budget blueprint, with an expected vote coming next week. And they have passed the Pentagon budget as well, the National Defense Authorization Act. If it feels like you've heard on the news this week, all you've heard on the news is that the Russian Trump story is the whole story. It is, well, there's nothing else to talk about. It's because that's pretty much the only story that's being covered by the fake stream media, especially the Chicken Noodle News Network, the purveyors of fake news. The case of the terminally ill baby Charlie Gard has sparked a firestorm of debate about whether or not the government should have the final say in the care of terminally ill patients. And it's reminiscent of another case from years ago that we covered on this show. In fact, we were the first national show to talk to the family of Terry Schiavo, who was the subject of the same kind of conversation and the same kind of decisions that had to be made. I'll talk to Terry's brother a little bit later on this hour. Texting and driving is illegal in many states, but what about texting and walking? There is one place, one of America's 50 states, that has made texting and walking against the law. We'll tell you where. And should taxpayers have to foot the bill for so-called artistic crosswalks, or should they be funded by private activist organizations? And if you're willing to let the politically correct activist organizations have special crosswalks in your town, if they pay for them, are you willing to let the less politically correct organizations have the same kind of access? And a new survey of Democrats shows just how much liberals want to impeach the president. Wait till you hear what Democrats are willing to give up to make that happen. You want to join the conversation? It's 866-HEY-LARS or 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. And I'd love to have you cast a vote in our quick poll. We put up a brand new question Monday through Friday. Tonight, the question is, would you feel safer in a town where everyone is required to own a gun? There are a number of towns like that around the United States. Kennesaw, Georgia comes to mind, but there's one in Colorado, and I'll tell you about that a little bit later on. Our quick poll can be found at LarsLarson.com, and it's brought to you by AMAC, the Association of Mature American Citizens, the kind of conservative values I believe in. Just go to amac.us to join or call 888-262-2006. AMAC is better, better for you and better for America. In yesterday's quick poll, we asked you, should it be illegal to walk and text on busy public streets? 57% of you said no, it should not be legal. 43% of you said yes. That is one of the most divided quick polls that I've seen in recent memory. Find my quick poll at LarsLarson.com. And while you're there, visit my new trophy room. Post a picture and a paragraph about your latest hunting or fishing adventure for a chance to win some fantastic prizes. Your call's now at 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. Let's go first to Jeremy. Hey, Jeremy, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars. Love the show. Want to make a mention about this fake news that's all been going on, and I'm all for the First Amendment. That's why I'm calling First Amendment Friday. But it should be illegal to destroy the individual's intellectual integrity by really coming out with crap in the news. And as individuals, we don't know what we don't know, and we rely on these news media and outlets to provide us accurate and intelligent sources that are credible. And I think that when you have news outlets that come out with things that are not credible, I think that's an attack on the individual's intellectual integrity.
I'm frustrated by it, too, but how and who would decide what fake news is and which news is illegal if you had that kind of limitation? Sure.
I wouldn't even know where to begin, Lars. It's frustrating.
Well, see, I wouldn't trust anybody to do it except the private sector. So if you had a law that said fake news is illegal, then someone has to decide which news stories have broken that law and which news stories do not break that law, and then you'd have to enforce it, and you'd run into a First Amendment problem immediately.
And I agree, and maybe if you want to publish, I'm all for publishing articles that are opinionated, but if they're going to be opinionated, like, they have to be backed up with hard references at every end of, like, when we write a paper in college, you end your paper with references. And I think every opinionated article, any article that gets published, any news media outlets, they have to end with, here are my references, these are the facts.
You know, that's not a bad standard, although I don't want a government to do that, to make that requirement. I don't mind if the private news organizations do it on their own. Thanks for the call, Jeremy. Ron's on the line. Hey, Ron, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars, you were talking about the Jeep Liberty and the diesel fuel.
Yeah, just for people who weren't listening, I mentioned that Jeep used to make a vehicle called the Jeep Liberty in it, and they made one version that had a diesel engine. And ironically enough, the Jeep Liberty was being made in Columbus, Ohio, but other than a few thousand they sold in the United States early on, they would not sell the vehicle in America because while it met Europe's pollution standards, it did not meet American pollution standards. So we had an American-made car that couldn't be sold in America.
Well, the Dodge Ram with the EcoDiesel is falling under the same hammer of the Liberty. I drive one. It's a 2016. I drive about 5,000 to 7,000 miles a month, and my monthly average in this region where I drive, with heavy congestion, is 26.7 miles for the month per gallon.
Per gallon, that's pretty darn good.
For a 7,000-pound truck.
It's not so bad. It's not a bad bet. But what's happening to it? You mean the EPA is going to keep them from building any more like that?
They did. They did a stop-build order on them last year, and it's still in effect.
I wonder if Donald Trump can reverse that. That would be nice to see. Ron, thanks for the call. Let's go to Bob in Charlottesville, Virginia. Hey, Bob, welcome to First Amendment Friday. What's on your mind?
Thanks, Lars. I really love your show.
Thank you.
You know, it's very frustrating. I voted for Trump. He wasn't my first choice, but the more I've seen him, the more I like him, what he's trying to do. But his biggest obstacle in draining the swamp is draining the swamp in his own party. Mitch McConnell, Paul Ryan, they are his biggest obstacles. They both spoke against him in his campaign. To me, I don't know if they're part of the deep state, but they're doing everything they can, digging in their heels. I mean, repeal, replace Obamacare. I mean, Mitch McConnell, I can't believe he's saying, like, he's working hard. I mean, are you kidding me?
No, they're not getting anything done.
People from Kentucky are paying close attention because the whole rest of the country is being held up because of Mitch McConnell being an obstructionist, being an establishment Republican who is continually obstructing Donald Trump. And the same for Paul Ryan. And it's extremely frustrating.
Well, it's one of the reasons that I got behind Paul Ryan's opponent, and that's Paul Nealon, who's going to try again to primary him in the primary elections. Americans can make a choice, and some of that choice may start in Wisconsin. It's First Amendment Friday, 866-439-5277.
Connect with Lars 24/7 on Facebook and Twitter
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to be with you on First Amendment Friday and glad to take your calls, too. We will get back to those calls in just a few minutes at 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. And it's my pleasure to welcome Curtis Houck, who's the managing editor of Newsbusters, who's been keeping an eye on what CNN, the Chicken Noodle News Network, and other networks have been doing with this Russia story over the last week. Curtis, thanks for taking the time on a Friday night.
No problem. An honor to speak with you.
So for all those people out there who say it seems like all the networks have been covering this week is wall-to-wall Trump, Russia, Trump Jr., are they right?
Right. Yeah, I was going to say it is not their eyes have not deceived them, what they're seeing and hearing. You know, not only we talk about the network spending ABC, CBS, NBC, after the emails came out, each of them spending over 50% of their newscast, 30-minute newscast, talking about Don Jr. We found earlier this week, CNN's New Day on Wednesday spent 93% of their three-hour show covering this. I mean, you look up obsession in the dictionary, and CNN's right there, but I think obsession is starting to become a word that really doesn't apply to CNN because it just beyond that, when it comes to what they're covering. And their midday programming is 100% devoted to it. And that day, on Wednesday's morning's case, when we looked at it, it's just becoming, it is just a farce, as you were saying. You know, chicken noodle soup, you know, kids throwing tantrums in the middle of the grocery store over this Russia thing. It's just exhausting.
I mean, that kind of level of coverage is the kind of thing that wouldn't surprise me in the aftermath of, say, another 9/11 terrorist attack, where you go to where you almost essentially don't cover anything but one story. But this isn't 9/11. This isn't the beginning of the Persian Gulf War. This isn't, say, a major earthquake or calamity. Like, even during Hurricane Katrina, how much do you suppose the network, say CNN, spent covering Hurricane Katrina? It might have topped 50%, but 93%? That's insane.
Right. I was going to say, my colleague Rich Noyes had a line earlier this week in another appearance that was something to the effect of, this is like a missing plane or a hurricane and an earthquake combined right now at CNN. It is just, they've talked about how their strategy is when something is big, they go all in, but as you were saying, I think for something like a terrorist attack or something that actually affects a lot of people, you think you would go all in. But this story is just something that if you go out and talk to people like you do, and I try to stay in touch with people outside of Washington where I am based, people just aren't interested in that. They want to talk about healthcare. Why is healthcare being stalled? Why is Obamacare repeal and replace not going anywhere? But no, that's not what CNN wants to talk about. They want to push this story because their lives have depended on it, basically. It's become a competition to see who can outdo the other one, I think, in terms of their meltdowns and hysteria. And I think CNN's right on track to get a gold medal right now. Then, you know, who at CNN is the most hysterical? I mean, don't ask me. That's just...
Well, especially I'm talking to Curtis Houck from Newsbusters. But, Curtis, what floors me is there's, you know, there were eight people in the room, and Donald Trump Jr. did take a meeting with a Russian lawyer that we now know had no information from the Russian government. And then it sounds like that was just a ruse to get the meeting. And then the question was, well, did he tell the truth about it? Well, if somebody asked him, have you had any meetings in which information was offered to you by the Russian government? I guess he could have said, if he wanted to be full disclosure, well, I was told I was going to a meeting about information from the Russian government, but it turned out there wasn't any information in the meeting from the Russian government. But if that's almost a ridiculous level of disclosure. And now they are so consumed with this idea of collusion without even stopping to say collusion on what? What crime, what offense, what violation occurred here? And when they have to answer, well, no crime, no offense. You know, it might have been politically troublesome if the Clinton campaign had been able to say Donald Trump's son is trying to get information and dirt on Hillary Clinton from the Russians. I have a feeling half of America, the conservative half, would have said, good, we want to know the dirt on her.
Right. I was going to say, and you just try to think about it, you know, if the shoe were on the other foot and you know, actually, we do have, you know, some time looking at that. You know, I'm a young millennial, so I was not around. I was watching cartoons then. But back in 1996, you know, there was that scandal with the Bill Clinton reelection campaign and the Red Chinese. The media basically gave no time to that. That was more or less ignored completely, from what my colleagues tell me. So, you know, that's one approach there, that, you know, there was some funny business actually going on over there. And my colleague Jeff Dickens did a study this week that found 20 times more coverage has been devoted to by the networks to this Donald Trump Jr. meeting than what a lot of listeners may recall about the Clintons giving a speech and dealing with uranium over in the same part of the country or same part of the world that the left is just completely up in arms about, you know, which is another thing. The left forever loved the idea of the Soviet Union and how when it fell, it was, you know, they were concerned about the future. But now Russia is this big boogeyman for them. You know, and they try to say, Jeremy Peters in the New York Times and others, that the right is the one that's obsessed with Russia. I think it's you guys, the ones that are obsessed with Russia, because you're the ones that have just this nostalgic foundation for, you know, the Red Soviet Union and Red Square and all that stuff going back decades.
Well, I'll tell you what, a little bit later on tonight, Curtis, if you haven't seen it already, I've got a soundbite from Glenn Greenwald. You know who he is, a well-known journalist. And actually, I think a journalist who tends to steer down the middle of the road instead of going to the right or the left. And he said, look, there was a story in Politico about the Clinton campaign seeking information from Moscow on Donald Trump, the Clinton campaign getting information from the government of Ukraine about Donald Trump, and somehow that wasn't a scandal. But if there was an effort by the Donald Trump campaign to get dirt on Hillary, that is treated at a whole different standard. And it kind of surprised me a bit that I've been impressed with Greenwald's work, you know, since, you know, talking about Edward Snowden and doing the first interviews with Edward Snowden. But I thought he's actually seeing it the right way. Is there a double standard where information sought by a Republican campaign is somehow evil, but if it's sought by the Democrats, it's holy?
I think, and that's the interesting point about Greenwald, he's going about it in such a sober manner. And even if you disagree with his reporting, going back to the Snowden reports, he just was very calm about it. He wasn't hysterical. You know, there weren't 9-person panels that he was a part of on CNN talking about this. He just went about his business like journalists are supposed to, I guess. You know, it's sad to say that it's kind of a lost art form that, in terms of emotion, is seeming to win out at CNN when that's not really the case with the way it should be, as people are supposed to be taught in journalism class.
Absolutely. But Curtis, CNN, I've got a break, but Curtis Houck is the managing editor of Newsbusters. Curtis, I appreciate the time on a Friday night. To your calls on this First Amendment Friday, Scott's on the line. Hey, Scott, welcome to the program. Do you have a theory for us?
I do, Lars. I think that my theory is that you're absolutely right. It was a plant. And all the Russian government wanted to happen was for Trump Jr. to show up. Now he's associated with Russia in some way, giving the Democratic Party fuel. Nothing really happened, you know. It's just that now the Democrats have something to hold on to, and that's what Russia wants, is to, you know, hurt the United States economically, and doing that from internally, having us tear ourselves apart from within.
I think you're right. Think about this. That Russian lawyer was initially denied entry to the United States, and then for some reason we don't understand, the Obama State Department granted her a special entry permit to come into the United States. And you have to wonder, why did she all of a sudden get this great special entry at a time when the Obama administration was supposed to be very concerned about relationships with Russia? Thank you very much for the call, Scott. Back in just a moment. It's First Amendment Friday. Your calls and emails are welcome. 866-439-5277 or talk at Lars Larson.
The Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's First Amendment Friday at 866-A-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk at LarsLarson.com. I mentioned the other day that there is an increasing number of people who are being hit as pedestrians in America because many of them are walking down the street, earbuds plugged into their ears, and their eyes are fixed on a screen. They're either reading or writing emails or texts. They're reading books. They're listening to music. And yet they're walking along a road or a highway, and they're very much at risk of being hit. Now, more accidents are happening. And I mentioned I'm not the biggest fan of having more rules and regulations for Americans. I don't think life gets better through greater regulation. But I did say I'd like to address it in some way. Is there a way to do this? Well, ironically enough, the same day I first talked about this, Wednesday, the Honolulu City Council passed a bill that prohibits pedestrians from looking at their mobile devices while they cross the street on foot. A pedestrian making a 911 call is exempt. Emergency responders performing official duties will not face penalties. Otherwise, fines range from $15 to $99, depending on how many times the person violates the ban. Let's go to Jonathan. Hey, Jonathan, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars, thanks for taking my call.
You bet. What's
love
up?
Love listening to you whenever I get a chance.
Thank you.
I wanted to weigh in a little bit on the idea of collusion between Trump and Putin, or United States and Russia, however you want to phrase it. And I want to weigh in on the fact that I think that there probably was. And the reason being is putting somebody like Hillary or Bernie Sanders into office would have stalled or backtracked the amount of progress that, in spite of the last 8 years, was made against the war on terror and against terrorism. And so with somebody like Trump in office, that is a pro-country, anti-terrorism, needing to stop the spread of radical Islamics, that is something that Putin would have definitely backed. So I think that there probably was some, because with that, we can actually do something about this war on terror, as opposed to just invite them all in. Because if we get them,
your theory is the Russians wanted Trump because then you could do a more effective job of combating terrorism.
Yes.
Even though the reasoning I've given for why the Russians would never want Donald Trump, well, actually, I give three major reasons. One, Hillary Clinton was a known quantity to the Russians. Donald Trump was not. Two, Hillary Clinton and her boss, Barack Obama, had cooperated, and more than cooperated, bent over backwards for the Russians, and Donald Trump had not. And the third reason, of course, was the economic one, that Russia makes 85% of its foreign currency income from the sale of gas and oil. Under Hillary Clinton, the cost of gas and oil would have, or the price, would have gone up. And under Donald Trump, it's likely to stay low. And those are for reasons that Hillary Clinton advocated to, you know, slow down or stop oil and gas drilling, whereas Donald Trump has advocated to dramatically increase it.
Oh, no. those are very definites also for not wanting him in. However, to a degree, I believe those that are in true power, money has been made. They've reached that saturation point of making money, i.e.
No, but you're not understanding. Jonathan,
the money off of things like the oil.
You understand that Russia's in severe economic trouble right now. You know that, right?
On paper, yes, they are.
I don't think it's on paper. The Russian government, the Russian economy is in really bad shape. So you may say the individual Russian oligarchs are rich. I understand that. But that money doesn't flow in to fund what the government does. It doesn't flow in to fund the feeding and the housing and the clothing of the Russian people. Russia's economy is in the tank.
There is that. Right. Well, like I said, I think that with putting Hillary in, it would have actually been truly detrimental to Russia as a country itself.
You may be right about that, but I'll think more about your theory. Let's go to Naysayer Dave. Hey, Dave, we love naysayers on this program. What's on your mind?
Well, I was listening to your show the other day, and you were talking about who gives a person his rights.
Mm-hmm.
And you never did say exactly who that was.
God.
And I would like to know
what
you think.
I said God. Our rights come because we are the product of God. And that's what the founders
believe. Which God is that?
Doesn't have to be any particular God. The founders of this country believe that, and I believe that.
And And which, well, there are so many gods.
I don't have to name one, and the founders did not name one. They sometimes referred to it as nature's god. But if you look at the Declaration of Independence and you look at the Constitution of the United States, nowhere in there does it say our rights come as a grant of government. And it would be very dangerous for us if they did, because if the government gives you a right to do A or B or C, then the government can take away the right to do A or B or C. But if you have constitutional rights...
They already do, Lars. They already do. When I was born, I could do whatever I want. If I want to kill somebody, if I want to do anything, and what would stop me? The law would stop me.
No, the law.
Who forms the law? Government.
Well, except for this.
God whatsoever.
Dave, do you know what the Constitution is and what it does? The government can pass a law that says you can't.
It has nothing to do with religion, Lars.
Dave,
the Constitution, freedom of separation of church and state.
No, Dave.
There are so many religions. And if you want a theocratic society, then
it's,
more power.
It's not
to
a theocratic society. In fact, the American Constitution forbids a theocratic society. And
well,
if you knew the Constitution, you would understand that America's Constitution does not allow a theocratic society. First of all, would have to say you can only be an office holder if you're, let's say, a Christian. Well, the American Constitution forbids a religious test to either be a member of Congress, the president, or a member of the court. So the Constitution says you can't have a theocracy. On the other hand, the Constitution does not say government granted you these rights. The rights come to you because you are a human being born as a child of God. And if they came from, well, then you tell me where you think your rights come from.
My rights come from whatever country I'm born in. If I was born in Iran,
I'm only talking about the United States. I'm not talking about other countries.
It depends.
It matters a lot.
The government. It does not. It depends on the government that you're subjected to.
Well, I realize outside the United States, but I'm only talking about this in terms of the United States. Only the United States.
So what are you saying, that God runs this country?
No, I've never said that either.
Well,
and Dave,
well, then is this God supported by this country?
Dave, we're talking
or
about
does God support this country.
You know what? Dave's just trying to be an idiot at this point. But Dave, thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Deborah. Hey, Deborah, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Hi.
Hi, Deborah.
I have a simple question.
Sure.
I want to know why politicians, who I assume are mostly lawyers, are setting the policy for my health insurance. Why can't we get the five top health insurance companies, not money-wise, insurer-wise, to set the policy?
Well, I'm not sure I'd want... I don't want policies... Do you want the fox guarding the hen house?
Yeah.
You do?
Well, sure.
You want the fox to guard the hen house? That's a classic example of no, you don't want it. In other words...
He'll keep the other foxes away. He's guarding the hen house. He's not attacking the hen house.
Deborah...
Yeah.
I don't want the insurance companies to set the policy. If we're going to have national policies at all, they should be set by our representatives. But I want them to stay as far out of health insurance as they possibly can and let the private marketplace work. In other words, if there's a demand for a certain kind of insurance, the American public will make it clear that they want that product, and the American industry will supply the product, and the government can set the basic rules, but not the way Obamacare did. Back in just a moment. It's First Amendment Friday, and you've got the Lars Larson Show.
Honestly provocative talk at LarsLarson.com.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to take your calls, but very important that we talk to Bobby Schindler, who is the president of the Terry Schiavo Life and Hope Network. Bobby, it's good to have you back on the program so many years later. Thanks for taking the time to come on and talk about Charlie Gard, this baby whose life is being put at risk by decisions by the British government. Thanks for taking the time.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
There's a real parallel between the case of Charlie Gard and the situation your late sister was in all those years ago.
Well, there are. I mean, legally there is. And also, I guess, really just the... what the parents are going through, the day-to-day torture, really, of not knowing whether their son is going to live or die. I mean, I saw my parents going through the same thing during the battle to save my sister's life.
Well, and I guess the question comes up, and I don't see a lot of the media other than conservative media discussing it, is who should be making these decisions? Should it be made by family members, or should it be made by the courts and the government?
Well, I think in this situation, it's pretty clear that the parents, that they're competent, they have the means to help their son, they have a facility that's willing to accept them. It doesn't make any sense, and I think that's why they're getting such an outpouring of support. It just doesn't make any sense with reasonable people looking at this case why the parents aren't afforded the opportunity to provide treatment for their son in this situation.
But then again, and let's remind people of the facts of your sister's situation, because we talked about it on this program before the national news media picked it up a few months later. And we talked about the fact that your sister was in a condition that was not brain dead, but was compromised medically, but she was alive. And her ex-husband, or I guess her widow, because technically he stayed married to your sister, even though he had already, you know, fathered a child with another woman and clearly planned to move on with his life. He wanted your sister to be dead, and he sought that in the courts. And tell me if I'm wrong about any of this, because it has been about 12 years since all this happened, and your parents were willing to step in and take care of your sister, and they begged her her husband to let them do that, and he would not let it happen, and even the Congress got involved in it.
That's right. Terry was just receiving basic and ordinary care. She had difficulty swallowing because of her brain injury, but nevertheless was receiving food and water through a feeding tube, and that was all that was sustaining her. She was portrayed inaccurately even to this day, her condition, and our family was battling the media. We were battling Michael, and it didn't make any sense to us or a lot of people that knew the facts of this case why my parents, again, weren't given the opportunity to bring Terry home and care for her. But I think we're seeing that more and more, situations like Charlie, my sister, and our healthcare systems today, where hospitals are really acting in their best interest rather than the patients, and we're seeing parental rights being infringed upon, and people's rights being infringed upon when it comes to making certain medical treatment decisions for their loved ones.
I'm talking to Bobby Schindler, who's the president of the Terry Schiavo Life and Hope Network, remembering his sister, who died in 2005 after a court-ordered removal of her feeding tube and water at the request of her husband, who wanted to move on with his life, but he did not want to divorce himself from Terry Schiavo, and he did not want to let her parents take over the care of Terry Schiavo. I guess the thing I find kind of shocking about this, Bobby, is you say the hospitals are looking out for their own best interests. Well, I want the hospitals to be somewhat agnostic about all this, that when you go in for care, they don't size you up and say, well, you really don't have much hope in your situation, and we don't want to spend the money. I want them to give me the care that my insurance entitles me to, and I want them to not decide, well, it would be a whole lot cheaper if we simply pulled the plug on this patient. And I certainly don't want the governments doing it, whether it's the British government or the United States government. But as you say, as healthcare gets more expensive, it seems as though both institutions like hospitals and insurance companies and governments are getting more and more involved in what were always personal choices of families.
Well, right, exactly. I mean, we're not vitalists, and we're not arguing that position. But we are arguing that people that are asking for reasonable treatment should be afforded that treatment. And I think we're seeing more and more healthcare is driven by cost, and it's just what you said. When hospitals see someone that comes in, say, with significant brain injury, and they see that person perhaps isn't going to improve much in the coming months or years, they say, well, it's a lot cheaper for us to end this person's life than it is to continue care. And I think we're seeing that more and more, where cost is driving decisions by hospitals, and they're looking out for their best interests rather than patients. And you're right, we should all be afforded reasonable care. And I think at least the work we're doing, we're seeing These types of treatment decisions being denied by families and being taken over by strangers making these types of decisions.
Bobby, here's the other thing that strikes me. I mean, you know that in the United States, if you or I showed up in the emergency room of a hospital, whether we have insurance or not, whether we have money or not, the hospital is obligated to provide us with life-saving care, even if they have to absorb it as a 100% loss. So we have this kind of ironic situation where the hospital will take in an accident victim off the streets with no money and no insurance and provide them with care. But your sister was in a situation where she had resources available. She had people available who were willing to, you know, step up and provide for her. And yet her life was still at risk. So on one hand, the hospital is saying we have to provide all this charity care, but sometimes we're going to decide to withdraw the charity care based on what's best for the bottom line. And that doesn't seem to make sense.
Well, no, and you're right. And look, I understand we have an issue with health care and the cost in health care today. But it seems to me that we shouldn't be targeting people like my sister and people that might be more costly than others to deny them treatment. We have to find a better way. We're a nation that cares and provides treatment for patients. And people like my sister with brain injuries and others like her shouldn't be targeted to end care because they might, you know, quote unquote, cost too much.
I couldn't agree with you more. What's the website for Terry Schiavo Life and Hope Network?
It's lifeandhope.com, lifeandhope.com.
Well, keep up the good work, Bobby, and thanks so much for taking the time, and God bless your sister and your parents.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, and God bless you.
Absolutely. Glad to have you with me on a First Amendment Friday. Hey, what's on your summer packing list? When you get ready to travel, wallet, phone, ID, keys, and of course your Harry's razor. I'll tell you what, if you forget your razor, you're in trouble. You're going to be stuck with one of those cheap little plastic jobs at the hotel. Harry's should be part of your summer routine. They have everything you need for a great shave. The travel bag, the lotion with SPF, travel size products, and each set comes with their travel blade cover to protect your razor in transit. I've been using Harry's for I can't even remember how many years. I get a great shave every single day, and 100% satisfaction guaranteed from Harry's means something. Would you like to get a trial set? All you have to do is cover shipping. Your free trial set includes the ergonomic razor handle, 5 precision engineered blades with the lubricating strip and a trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and that travel blade cover that I mentioned. To get it, go to harrys.com/Lars. That's harrys.com/Lars. You want to join the conversation? It's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com.
The Lars Larson Show.